You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
This is the Dan Le Batour Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We are appreciative, Stugatz. I don't say this nearly enough to our audience. We're appreciative that anybody would value these microphones enough to sponsor what it is that we do any day. And because this is a ridiculous way to make a living, no matter how much we complain about it. And furthermore, we value that any time that we ask the audience for help with something, no matter how grand or modest, the audience exceeds our expectations. Tim Kirkson is now in the waiting room where we are holding him actively hostage, threatening through charity to extort you for money on behalf of the ALS cure. He will not appear. He's waiting there and we are wasting the man's time and we will not go to him until we reach a certain number. But Billy, have we reached any of the benchmarks so far on some of your half-baked ideas?
We have. Chris is now allowed to do a magic trick at some point. You can determine when that is because I feel like you don't want him to do a magic trick.
He doesn't think he can do a magic trick.
Well, he hasn't gotten his nose back yet, so maybe that's throwing his confidence off.
When does he get the nose back?
Dan said he has to get it back at $35,000, which is the same number that we need to get Tim Kirkson on here. We're $700 shy of that right now. However, we did eclipse the first $2,130, so Tom will be getting pied at some point.
I have a headache.
Yes, because you lost your nose. I can understand that. Tom, you can get out of here now. I saw a room being, much like you would if you are a professional hitman in Ozark, I see a room that is tarped out there because there will be pie on the floor and pie in your face. I don't know who Billy, this half-baked idea,
yes.
Who's throwing it in his face? Is it Juju who's filming this? How are we doing this?
So Tom did ask who's going to be throwing the first one, to which the Cuban pilot jumped up and said, I got this. So Tony will be throwing the first pie, it appears.
Okay, I think this is
Gongana,
all a bad idea.
Which was a note that was made.
Yeah, I think a poor idea that's about to be poorly executed, but we will see as the overconfident
Cuban
pilot.
Why don't you believe in this idea? It could be great. Look, why don't we do this? Why don't we start out with Tom, and then every $2,130, someone else gets pied?
I am not going to Tom until we get to our goal. I'm not negotiating with the audience. I am threatening the audience. And furthermore, I'm going to threaten the audience with Tom Brady contract talk.
Oh, wow.
$500 and we get out of this.
Yep.
It's amazing that a man would get that much money for doing something we don't know he's good at. That's it. That's all. I'm fascinated by it.
So Scott's got $50 million.
Yep.
And he's not good at this.
How do you donate?
I don't understand why the audience, which is always fascinated by Brady and money, isn't interested in this topic.
I mean, maybe the first time.
Yeah. I'm more interested in what we saw yesterday out of Tom Brady, which was a rare slip from the GOAT. Did you guys see the white roots poking out the back of his head?
I did.
Oh, no.
Yes.
White hair. His roots are white.
Oh,
my gosh.
Shocking.
No, I knew he dyed his hair. Everyone knew he dyed his hair.
But to dye it poorly, to dye it not well enough.
To slip up and show your white roots?
No.
And that it's white?
You watched the match?
No, I watched it on mute for a little bit.
Well, Chris Cody can't get enough of it. Chris Cody.
I loved it.
Really?
I wish they could do regular golf like they do the match.
Right.
Because I'm like
with
riveted.
Good golfers.
Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady trying to read a putt. Together arguing, you can like see their dynamics of Aaron's like, no, I like it. This imagine if it was actual golfers. Like it is so riveting the way they have them mic'd up, the access we get to them. It is great. And Tom Brady, they did a 30-minute show after the match, which was the four of them just sitting down with Ernie Johnson. Tom Brady's going to be good at broadcasting. I learned that last night. He's friendly. He's more loose now. I think he's going to be excellent at broadcasting.
What? Yeah, he says the F word. He curses a lot. I've been watching Man in the Arena, which, while not at all close to The Last Dance, has been interesting. One of the big revelations for me was remembering that Tom Brady used to not be good looking. That was shocking to learn and rediscover, basically.
They were taking shots at Josh Allen about, you know, not winning Super Bowls, about being a little bit chunky, and not just the two of them, but Patrick Mahomes as well. We're all ganging up on him.
I gotta say, the young guns, it made me feel better about how I fit into a golf polo.
Josh Allen was like the worst golfer by far of the four of them.
Yes.
Oh, but he hits bombs, right?
He hits bombs, but he was all over the place. You could tell the nerves. He had never played with a gallery before.
Why would that surprise you? Just no accuracy, just bombs. He's accurate as a quarterback now, but it's like his college game.
Tim is just sitting there. This is so mean to him.
It's not mean to him. It's our audience's fault. Mike, tell me more about Man in the Arena. Tim, we'll get to you in a second. I'm very eager to talk to you, but if the audience isn't charitable enough, I'm sorry to have to threaten them with this, but that's the deal. Tim's just sitting there waiting.
Well, Man in the Arena just doesn't have the great footage that The Last Dance had, because The Last Dance had a film crew documenting everything moment by moment, because they were going to make a documentary about that anyway. So they had really great access. Whereas Man in the Arena was kind of limited to what the Patriots on staff camera team collected over the years. And it's really more Tom talking directly to camera. And I wasn't a fan of that. But it's great to be reminded of like how much we thought the Lawyer Malloy game meant to Bill Belichick. Tom Jackson did a whole thing that this team has quit. They hate their coach. This was a quote from Tom Jackson. The New England Patriots hate their coach. And I actually think it still might be the case, but it's just shocking in retrospect to know that the greatest head coach of all time was on the hot seat because he just cut Lawyer Malloy. And also, I cannot stress this enough. Tom Brady looked like a different person. He wasn't the most handsome quarterback on his own team.
I can't believe that you think that Man in the Arena was just so-so. We are $250 short.
$240 now.
No, I thought it was so-so compared to The Last Dance, which is one of the greatest sports documentaries I've ever seen.
Of course.
I'm watching Man in the Arena. I want to make it through all that. It's made me love Tom Brady. You know what I do after every Man in the Arena episode? Is I buy more overpriced Tom Brady wear. It is super succeeding in me loving Tom Brady.
It's why I don't watch it. Like, I don't want to love Tom Brady. He's beaten my team so many times. It was so frustrating having him in the same division for so long. I don't want to love Tom Brady. I don't. I don't want to love him.
Fans, you're $230 away from us closing the book on Tom Brady talk and actually hearing from Tom Kirkchin. But in the meantime, I do want to say, you remember how I used to be a fan of an NFL team? Now I'm a fan of football, and I'm Rob Lowing it. I am buying tickets to Mahomes versus Brady. I'm buying tickets to Rodgers versus Josh Allen. If anything, Man in the Arena has made me realize all these teams that Tom Brady has gone through, and it seems so long ago, so distant. He was playing against Cordell Stewart in a playoff game. He has spanned generations of football players. He's taken them all out. And to be able to see him at this point in his career, where he's coming off arguably maybe his greatest season, he has defied every odd. And it's amazing to see him still excelling at this, and I cannot explain any of it.
He's taken everyone out except for Nick Foles.
Stugatz, I know the audience is tired of Tom Brady, but the idea that we would spend this much time talking about sports and that Mike Ryan's last sentence of conclusion is, I can't believe what I'm watching and I can't explain any of it. I mean, that's fairly astounding for the amount of coverage we pour into how are these people great that we're all like, and he's 45 and he's got white hair and he didn't used to be beautiful and he conquers everything and he was a sixth round pick and we can't explain it.
25.
And he's still MVP worthy. 7 years past where Peyton Manning's neck allowed him to play. And we can't explain
12 years after you said he was done.
We can't explain any of it.
$25 away from hearing from Tom Kirkchin. So in the meantime, here's my take on Tom Brady this season. The retirement announcement caught me by surprise because I thought he was just going to play forever. And I assumed, and it made me regret that I didn't watch that final season with passion and deep appreciation. This upcoming NFL season, while I don't believe it to be his last, I'm going to revel in it. I'm going to just really embrace the fact that I'm watching the greatest of all time.
And root for him? Will you root for him?
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to be rooting for Tom Brady.
When he joins the Dolphins next year, will you become a Dolphin fan?
I will root for Tom Brady forever because really? It is a greatness that I've never seen before in that sport. I can't explain it. I can't. He is. I think older people are just going to continue to identify. Like yesterday, I was rooting for Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady over Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen just because they're contemporaries.
That would be the ultimate victory. I thought that Michael Jordan, as the greatest winner ever, had conquered gravity.
$14 away.
And winning, and even made bald cool. Even made bald cool. But Tom Brady will conquer all by being an old man who continues to win without explanation at everything that he does.
$4 away from hearing from Tim Kirchner.
Wow, so close.
I love that it's leaking in dollars at a
all
time.
All right, I got $5 cash. Let's go. Bring him up.
I do too. Jesus. Enough. $20. We have on
Tim
to Tim in cash.
What was he doing? Was he doing box scores? He's bored. He's tired as he turned us down. Tim Kirkshin, what are you doing right now? Tell us. Welcome. We are happy to see your face, sir. What were you working on? Were you texting people with sports and baseball information?
I was just responding to some people this morning. I got a lot of text messages this morning, so I was being polite and responding.
Okay, I'm sorry that our audience and we kept you waiting. We are thrilled to have you. We have a new batch of looks like for you, and we also want to ask you an assortment of baseball questions. We think that baseball, ESPN, and all networks should now break into programming whenever there's a complete game. Do you agree with us? Instead of no hitters, the way we used
to
do it.
It's the new perfect game.
And perfect games. Yeah. Instead of if someone is headed toward a complete game, we break into programming in the seventh and eighth inning of whatever it is we're doing in sports.
The first time I've laughed in a year. Martin Perez has two complete games. He's the best pitcher in the American League so far.
Cy Young.
And it's amazing because he's a journeyman who's got a 1.60 ERA. It's not a bad idea, Dan, given how much things have changed. Just to tell you how old I am, Bob Gibson in 1968 completed 28 out of his 34 starts.
Oh, God.
But not one, in the six games he did not complete, not once did the manager come to the mound and take the ball away from him, meaning he was pinch hit for in between innings. So he didn't complete every game, just 28 out of 34. But not once did the manager come to the mound and say, Bob, give me the ball. You've had enough. I think he was afraid of Bob Gibson to begin with.
I love that.
But that just kind of shows you how things have changed. I told you guys that, Warren Spahn had almost as many complete games after he turned 40 as Curt Schilling had in his career. And Curt Schilling was, a warrior in his time. This is where we are in baseball. If you go five, that's great. Good enough. But six, seven, eight, and now nine, it just doesn't happen very often.
Timmy, have we seen the last of the ace? Is the ace dead?
I'm kind of afraid that, yes, to me, the ace is the guy who finishes the game. He's going to start game one. You know he's going to start game seven, and you know he's going to pitch as far as he can go. And you know he's not coming out until he says he's coming out, which often didn't happen very often. I remember Jack Morris, 91 World Series. Tom Kelly came to take him out in the ninth inning of that game, and Morris said, I'm not coming out of the game. And after the game, Randy Bush of the Twins told me, I did the sidebar for Sports Illustrated. He said, if Tom Kelly had taken him out of the game, it would have been the first time that a manager had ever been killed on the mound because Jack Morris would have killed him. That's just the way it worked in 1991. And just fast forward 31 years later to how much things have changed.
I'm glad you said this because Dan yesterday said that Alex Wood was an ace. Tell him why he's wrong.
Well, Alex Wood is a really good pitcher, and he's been good this year, but I think ace is a little bit too much. It's just hard to define an ace when we look at, say, Max Scherzer, who's a Hall of Famer, another warrior from today, and he has fewer complete games in his career than Bob Gibson had shutouts in 1968 alone. There's your difference in how the game is played. Again, a million years ago, we all understand that, compared to today.
Billy wanted to waste your time here with something that he wants as a rule change in baseball.
I would never. Tim, hi, how are you doing? It's Billy. It's been a while.
Good, Billy. Nice to see you. Nice to see Chris. Chris, I can give you some of my nose, okay? I have plenty here.
He got it back. Here you go. So anyway, Tim, yeah. Jesus Sanchez hit a 496-foot home run the other day, which was the second longest home run in the history of Coors Field, only behind Giancarlo Stanton, who hit one 504 feet. Now, I said that the second longest home run was a lot more impressive than the longest home run, because in the video, the longest home run goes to center field. It only goes like halfway up in the bleachers, right? So then we were talking about it as a crew here, and we thought, you know what? We shouldn't we shouldn't punish balls that are just absolutely crushed, that just slightly go foul. So we were thinking of maybe adding some walls in foul territory. And if the ball went over those walls, they would count as hits, like singles, doubles, triples, home runs. There'd be four walls. What do you think of this?
I think it's a really bad idea.
Why?
Timmy, I mean.
Look, you guys are so funny. You need to keep coming up with stuff. But part of the game is you got to keep it fair. And if you don't keep it fair, you know, this is what we talked about with Barry Bonds all those years. He would get that ball on the inside part of the plate that everyone else hooks into right field foul territory. And he was able to keep it fair. You hear that all the time. That's what the great hitters can do. So I'm not sure we should be rewarding anyone for a foul ball.
But for really getting a hold of a foul ball, Tim, you know what I mean? Like, we're not putting the wall at like third base. Like, this is going to be like 500 feet out there, you know?
Yeah, I see your point, and I've enjoyed some majestic foul balls in my time. I agree.
Ooh,
but,
top five foul balls, Tim, you've ever seen.
He's got them. He's got them.
He's not doing top five foul balls, but he might do top five batting stances. Stugat said he's got top five batting stances for you, and I think we might be able to lure Tim Kirkchen into yet another conversation about batting stances.
You ran the risk of making Tim Kirkchen surly, because if you didn't hold him hostage in the waiting room, right, we would have gotten top five foul balls.
But I have top five batting stances. Timmy, would you like to hear them?
Of course.
Okay. Do you have yours?
I'll have to figure it out, but okay. Keep going.
I'm sure he will do it. We'll see if any of yours qualify. I have only one name in mind that I believe will absolutely qualify.
Okay. Number five, Craig Counsell.
Good.
Thank you, Timmy. Wow. I mean, the highest of compliments.
Not the highest. Good is okay. Let's see if it makes Timmy's top five. Number four,
Mickey Tettleton.
Like it. I covered him.
Both bats way over their heads, both of them. Number three,
Tony Bautista.
He's on my list, absolutely.
Wow, Tony Bats.
Number two,
Gary Sheffield.
Love it. Very menacing the way he waved it like this. Yes. Big bat, yep. Incredibly strong hands and wrists.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Julio Franco, number one.
I was thinking about Julio. Rod Carew.
Yeah, I used to love to watch him. That little open stance. His hands were like water. He bunted. He hit it wherever he wanted. He was great. Loved his stance. I never saw how he got any power doing that, but he could hit it a long way when he wanted to. That's a pretty good list, Stu guy. Very impressed.
Now let's do Timmy's list, because there was one giant omission there. Number five, Tim.
Well, I'm going to just repeat. Craig Counsell is on the top five. Way to go, Stu guy.
Way to go. Excellent choice.
I had to dig deep for that one, Timmy.
I asked him about it recently, and he said, I said, Craig, why did you do that? And he goes, I don't know. It just was comfortable one day, so I just stayed with it. His kids are all players. So I said, have your kids seen it? And they said, yeah, they think it's ridiculous. Like, Dad, what were you doing? He looked like a man stuck in a phone booth with a bee, just trying to knock it around. It was so bad, and yet he was good with it. Tony Bautista's on the list too. Way to go, Stu Gods.
Number four.
Open stance, which he just tried in winter ball one day, and just, you know, kidding around, and it worked. So he stayed with it. You know, he's actually facing the pitcher like this, and then he turns and then goes into a regular stance. That was bizarre for Dan, but I believe it too. Julio Franco is number three. I've never seen anybody raise his arms quite like Julio Franco did. As I told you guys, I saw him take batting practice many times with a batting donut on his bat. Now he's one of the, uses one of the biggest bats ever. Yeah. He's got a batting donut on it, and he's hitting line drives all over right and right center field in batting practice with a donut on the bat. Bobby Valentine has an answer for everything. I said, Bobby, we're standing right there. How is he able to do that? And he said, I have no idea how he's able to do that. But he said, if I were advising any young kid, I would tell them to hit and set up and have a stance just like Julio Franco. Number two is John Walkenfuss.
I can't even believe there's a number one ahead of John Walkenfuss.
Well, John, it's one or 1A. It's all the same. You know, he had this bizarre open stance, and his fingers were going, and he was going back and forth. It was really bizarre. But just because the next guy, number one, should be number two, but I'm putting him number one, is Dick McCall, number three for the Tigers in the 60s, who was a really good player. People don't even realize how good he was. But he did that thing like this, and I, you know, that was my wheelhouse as a kid, watching baseball games in the 60s. And I used to ask my dad, how in the world can that guy hit like that?
What thing like this? For those who aren't watching you on YouTube, what thing like this?
Well, he would just get his hands and he would push them back and forth like before the pitch came in. It was just so odd, and the whole setup was so odd. So I would go with those five. And Stugatz, to have two of mine on your five, wow. I guess that's really good for you. Not sure about for me.
Tim, how was Jeff Bagwell able to hit the way that had his legs all the way open and was squatting down as if he was, you know, doing, you know, number two a little bit?
Yeah, Craig Biggio asked me that multiple times. How can anyone who looks like he's at the plate going to the bathroom able to hit like Jeff Bagwell could hit? And Jeff Bagwell is a wildly underrated player. You could make a case, one of the five best first basemen of all time. That's how good Jeff Bagwell was. And he was unbelievably athletic. Runner, base runner, fielder, great soccer player at the University of Hartford. Odd batting stance, but it just proves again how beautiful this sport is that however you get to the hitting zone, to the hitting area, it doesn't matter as long as you get there.
The killer bees. Mike, you seemed outraged about my top five, Timmy's top five. We left someone off. Well,
Bagwell should have been up there.
Bags is the person.
Bagwell had a batting stance that was tough to replicate because it tested your quads. It hurt.
And your glutes.
It was like that machine in the gym that you don't really know what it does, that you're standing up and you have to go like this.
The squat.
You know what I mean? No, not the squat.
Machine.
The one that you're like, the looks one where like you bring your baby.
Like the Thighmaster things where you squeeze your thighs together.
That's the one.
This Walkenfuss stance, for people that haven't seen it, he just shows his ass to the pitcher.
That's right.
Yes. Kind of like,
that's right.
Kind of like has this thing that's going with the ass out of the
Explain
pitcher.
To them the Walkenfuss stance for the newcomers among us who are making John Walkenfuss trend right now, because people can't believe what an amazing batting stance he had.
Right. Again, just all you're supposed to be quiet at the plate. Paul Molitor had the quietest hands I've ever seen, completely still. Mike Piazza the same way. John Walkenfuss, like everything was moving on his body, his feet, his butt, his hands, his shoulders, everything was just going back and forth. You know, hitters call it a trigger or a starter, something to get their swing going. He had like 10 triggers to get his body moving forward to try to hit a baseball.
Put these on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show, please. Were Rod Carew's hands like water? Did Paul Molitor have the quietest hands anyone has ever seen? And do you know the difference between hands like water and the quietest hands you've ever seen? What is the difference between those two things, Tim?
Well, most people have a violent, you know, connection to the baseball, including Paul Molitor. But it seemed like Carew was just all so wristy in everything that he do. He would just flip his wrists at the ball, and his hands are an extension of his wrists. So that's why I've always said he has hands like water, because they just kind of floated through the strike zone at the end of those incredible wrists that he had.
Do you believe, and we're going to get to Tim Kirkchian's top five first baseman of all time since he brought it up, since he threw Bagwell in there.
Can I grab my list?
You have a top five list of top five first baseman of all time?
Of course I do.
Does Quinn Snyder look like he's got to find a way to come up with $50,000 by Friday, or he's a dead man? There are a lot of Quinn Snyders. Does he look like a motivational speaker who secretly lives at the airport? Does he look like a retired infomercial salesman looking to get back in the game by attending crypto seminars? He does. He just looks greasy, right? Or does he just look like infidelity?
Well, we'll leave that one alone. That's I haven't seen Quinn Snyder in a while, but he's a unique looking fellow.
He looks like infidelity, Tim.
I mean, he does look like infidelity. Top five first baseman of all time. Does Kyle Lowry look like a gummy bear?
You know, when I did that horrendous hot dog race in Milwaukee, that when I ran around as a hot dog because my boss made me do it, it was the worst day of my entire life as far as being on a baseball field in any way. So after I was done and finished last by a mile, I walked in the Brewers clubhouse after the game, and Kyle Loesch saw me. Oh, you said Kyle Lowry?
That's okay. Kyle Loesch's story is fine if it involves you racing as a hot dog. That's fine. Looks like a gummy bear. Kyle Loesch does not. It's okay.
Your boss put the hot dog costume on and forced you to run?
This seems like an HR violation. Who was the boss? Name him. Why were you done? File a grievance publicly against a boss putting...
Kyle Loesch!
Mike McQuaid, who I was afraid of and still am because he was great. So good. Yes. He made me run in the sausage race. So the point is, I was so bad that I was just overpowered by the hot dog costume that when I got into the clubhouse, Kyle Lowry, announced in the loudest voice possible when I walked in, not wearing the costume anymore, there he is, the worst hot dog of all time. And everyone understood that I was the guy who finished dead last in the race. So then after the game, we have a post-game meal after the game. And it's in Milwaukee, of course. So I go back to the camp we had there, and the post-game meal was bratwurst. So I had to eat a couple bratwursts after running as a hot dog in the worst race in history.
Does Dana Holgorsen look like he smokes an entire cigarette without ever pulling it from his mouth?
He does.
Does Mike Budenholzer look like his rideshare just drove past him and just kept going? Does Devin Booker look like the cartoon version of Devin Booker? He really does. Does Nick Wright look like if Uncut Gems was a person? We got a few good Nick Wrights here. Skeezy bartender at a college town hotspot on 90s night. Who are your top five first basemen? Number five, Tim Kirkchian, will go out to a pie in the face with Tom Haberstroh in a second. What are you waving three fingers at me
for? We've raised enough money in this Tim Kirkchian segment to do three pies in the face.
Okay, wow. Three pies in the face. How much needs to be raised in order for a pie in the face to appear? Is it $2,000?
It's $2,130 needs to be raised. And since we started this, we have done enough for three pies in the face.
All right, we will see how this goes. Number five, Tim Kirkchian. Top five first baseman of all time.
Well, again, this is really hard. Five and four are really hard. I think the rest are easy. I've got Bagwell as number five just because of what I told you earlier, and had 150 run season, won an MVP. And again, a terrific all round player who played, the first 8 years of his career in that enormous ballpark at the Astrodome.
I have him at four.
Dan, I pose to you, how about instead of fanfare for three, two, and one, we go to a different pie in the face?
Oh, wow.
Yes, yeah. I think that'll have a video payoff. I don't know whether it'll have payoff.
No, it's going to make a sound. Yeah. I imagine it's going to make a sound. Tony, make sure you hit him hard enough to make a sound.
All right, so can Tim Kirkshen, he's still thinking about it. I think he's formulating his list. It might be finalized.
Well, 5-4 is very tricky. It's going to be interesting to see who he goes. There is a definitive top three, Dan. I will tell you that.
And before we go to that, real quick, does Mike Leach look like the first wedding guest to order at the open bar, who, as he walks away with his cocktail, gleefully announces to the grower, line that drinks are on me.
Isn't he the guy that looks like one of the dogs that play cards?
Yes.
I love that he remembers these.
Does Nick Wright look like a malnourished Lin-Manuel Miranda? He so does. Does Mike Brown look like a big toe? Wait a minute. Yeah. I thought Joe West looked like a big toe. Or does Joe West look like a baked potato?
Bo Pelini looked like a toe.
That's a good one.
Put it on the poll, please, Guillermo.
Toe Pelini.
At Levitard Show.
Thumb.
Who looks most like... That's Charles Barkley. Who looks most like a toe? Toe Pelini, Mike Brown, or Joe West? Does Steve Kerr look like a brand new dish sponge? Stugatz, where are you on your list? Is your list of top five first basemen? Do you want to have dueling lists with Tim Kirkshen?
I'll give my number five. I think we have the same three, perhaps in a different order. I had Bagwell at number four. My number five is Don Mattingly. Now, Timmy's going to disagree, but if your nickname is Donnie Baseball, you make my top five, okay?
Don Mattingly is not in the top five, but he's one of the best players I've ever seen. And if it weren't for his back injury, he would have been a Hall of Famer. And not to get too corny here, but in his final year, he went to Buck Showalter, the Yankees manager, and said, "You got to take me out of the four spot. I'm not good enough to hit there anymore." He told his own manager that, instead of the manager having to tell him that. And then later that year, he went to Buck Showalter and said, "You got to get another first baseman. I'm not good enough to be the first baseman for the Yankees anymore." And they traded for Tino Martinez and won a bunch of championships. That's the guy that Don Mattingly is and was. After Keith Hernandez, he's the greatest defensive first baseman I've ever seen.
Does Nick Nurse look like a sitcom dad? Does Urban Meyer look like he doesn't slow down when a squirrel runs in front of his luxury sedan, nonchalantly telling his kids in the back seat, "Circle of life, kiddos"?
He doesn't look like that guy. He is that guy.
Does Trevor Lawrence look like a Clydesdale?
He does.
It's weird.
That's amazing.
It is weird.
Yes.
Does Adam Silver... look like a burnt out glow stick? Number four, Tim.
Oh, number four, it's impossible. Four and five, there's so many, but I'm going with Johnny Mize. Played with a bunch of teams, hit a bunch of homers, three homer games. I got him as five. Hold on.
We're building suspense. Remember, for every top three, instead of fanfare, Tom Haberstroh is going to get hit in the face with a pie. So we now also mic that studio over there where it's going to happen.
My top three or Timmy's?
For Timmy's.
Oh, God.
Do you want to just give us the rest of your top five? Do you want to just go through it? Since the pie payoff is going to be the sound of the pies.
Yes, yes. Number three for me is Albert Pujols. Number two is Jimmy Fox. And number one, of course, is Lou Gehrig.
And today, as we raise money to help with the, there's not really the cure, but with the care for ALS, and this is a personal story to Tim as well, the reason that he is helping us with this cause today. Let's finish up your list here, and let's get the timing on this right. So we are down to number three with Tim Kirkshen. I don't have video in here of...
Just open the door for them.
...of Tom, because our organization on some of this stuff, can be spotty. All right, so here we go. We're going to have a pie in the face on Tom upon the announcement of Tim Kirkshen's number three. Tom seems like he's cheating with goggles, but, you know, you get what you pay for. Okay. I'm just saying. Tim, where are we on number three, please?
This is, again, 2 and 3 are interchangeable, but I'm going to go with Stugatz and put Albert Pujols third on the list. Over 600 homers, 3,000 hits, got a chance for 700 homers. First 10 full seasons, arguably the best first 10 full seasons by anyone in history. His drop off offensively in the last few years may just slide him a tiny bit behind.
Hey, can he get to it, Tim? Can he get to it, Tim? Please, please. I'm very nervous.
Go ahead.
Go. Number 2?
No.
No. Hold on.
We need
the face.
Oh, that is good. Oh, wow. That was a visual payoff.
That's the goggle thing.
He's got to do 2 more of those. That was aggressive.
That looked like that hurt.
That sounded like his nose.
I can't see anything.
That wasn't the throwing of a pie. It was a smashing of the pie in the face.
Tony just Will Smith them.
Number 2. Wait a minute. Are you ready for another one? Number 2, Tim.
Number 2 is Jimmy Fox. 534 homers, 325 lifetime average, triple crown winner, multiple MVP winner, back-to-back years. I grew up to stories of Jimmy Fox in my household. My dad was a huge, grew up in Boston when Jimmy Fox was a star there, star with the A's. And he retired a little bit early, but 325 with over 500 homers. That's Ruth, that's Williams, and that's Jimmy Fox.
Do we have the visual payoff of Tom with horror on his face? Number 2, go ahead.
Oh, man.
Ouch, that sounds like it hurts.
Sounds like an uppercut.
It sounds like he's being hit in the face with a brick.
It seems way safer than the pepper.
Yes, it doesn't seem. It seems like we're going to break something on Tom's face. I'm glad we've got
it. Tom bleeding?
I'm glad. Is there blood on your mouth?
He's missing a nose. That was a cherry.
It's delicious. I love the graham cracker crust crumble that you sprinkled on there.
Do you have it on? You have it on the top of your bald head. There's graham cracker crust. And finally, Tim Kirchin, the number 1 first baseman of all time.
It's Lou Gehrig, and as great as those other guys are, I don't think there's a close second. As we know, if he hadn't gotten sick, he would have retired as the all-time leader in runs scored and RBIs. That's how great he was. Of the 5 greatest RBI seasons, he's got 3 of them. 1927, mostly hitting behind Babe Ruth in the order. He drove in, 183 runs or whatever it was. And Ruth hit 60 homers hitting in front of him. So there's no doubt Lou Gehrig's the greatest first baseman of all time. And I think you can make a case after Ruth, Williams, and Barry Bonds that Lou Gehrig is the 4th greatest hitter of all time. You could make that case, I think.
183 RBIs. Bye!
Congratulations. Another successful round, and I guess we can just keep doing this $2,000 at a time, right? He's got graham cracker crust in his ear. Before we let you go, Tim, can you explain to us what it is baseball is doing today, why it is that we're raising money? Thank you for your time, and thank you for your efforts in this with Boog Chombi and others, because baseball does a good thing today, raising awareness for, again, we say it again, something that has no cure but can still be treated with care.
Yeah, at every ballpark tonight, there'll be a tribute to Lou Gehrig, and Tom Haberstroh had a lot to do with this, and of course, John Chombi's had so much to do with this for so, so long. So tonight in Baltimore, at Camden Yards, my brother Matt, who has ALS, he will take out lineup card to home plate tonight for a major league game. Jim Poole, former Orioles pitcher, will throw out the first ball. He has ALS also. And I can't even begin to tell you how touched I am from all the friends and family and strangers who have contacted me, especially my brother, since he was diagnosed in July of 2021. Tonight's a really important night. This is a wretched, insidious disease, and we need to do better. And so many people are working on this, but as one woman told me whose 2 family members died at age 49, she said, "This is the worst disease ever, but it has the greatest support system ever for those patients." And I can tell you through my brother that that is indeed true.
before we get you out of here, because this was a cause that you were helping Boog with, but then it arrived with a brutal thudding punch. You've gone through some things recently with your family. So the idea that you were helping this cause before it would arrive at your doorstep, when you say wretched, insidious disease, in order to humanize it, Tim, so people understand what it is that they're helping with on care, can you explain to people how it is that this this disease gets a hold of people and they need urgent help from others in order to live?
Yeah, well, I'll personalize with my brother. Again, my brother was a great college baseball player at Catholic University, and he's only a little bit bigger than me, but he's so strong. And on October 1st last year, Catholic U had him throw out the ceremonial first pitch at a game at Mount St. Mary's. It was the only fall game of the year for Catholic U. And to have a player from the visiting team do it is just unprecedented. But Ross Natoli, the coach at CU, explained this is important for our program. So my brother, who again had a major league throwing arm, has lost the strength and dexterity in his index finger and his thumb. So he has to now grip a baseball with three fingers and try to throw it that way. And I played catch with him in the front yard. How many times did we do that when we were kids? And he figured out how to throw a ball and still look like an athlete and a ball player. So he goes to Mount St. Mary's that day, and they present him, Ross Natoli does, with a shirt that's got his name, M. Kirkchen, on the back, and number 2, which is the number he wore at Catholic University. So he's wearing a CU jersey with his name and his number on the back. And after he threw out the first ball, an athletic strike, he looked to his right and his family, his kids, me, my daughter, we were all wearing Catholic University jerseys with M. Kirkchen 2 on the back. And then my brother looked further to the right, and all 47 players on the Catholic University team were wearing that jersey, M. Kirkchen 2 on the back. And that's the first time I've seen my brother cry since this ordeal began in July 2021, because he was so touched by how personal it was, but it was such a baseball move. And this is what baseball does for its players. It celebrates them, it honors them. And Catholic U, of course, went out and won that doubleheader that day, all wearing my brother's name and his number on their backs.
Tom, before we get out of here, you've got what, Tom Haberstroh, for Tim Kirkchen?
Yeah, people don't know this, but 2 years ago when we decided to start Lou Gehrig Day Committee to get a league-wide Lou Gehrig Day in Major League Baseball, the first call I made to learn how to navigate this labyrinth of trying to get this done, the first call I made was Tim Kirkchen. And I just want to say thank you, Tim, and I'm so sorry this is hitting your family, but I got to say, like, without Tim Kirkchen, this does not get done. He gave me advice. I don't know if he remembers this phone call, but I just want to say thank you, Tim, and we're in this together, and so is the Lebatard Show and Major League Baseball, in large part because of your advice from 2 years ago, so thank you. I'm going to be sneezing graham cracker crust and whipped cream for the next 3 weeks. So,
Tim, thank you. Guys, just one more time, tell people where they need to go, Tom, if they want to contribute here to something that baseball is doing today.
Yeah, it's worldofsui.com. I was just going to say worldofsui.com. Go there to donate. Our goal was $44,444, and it looks like we're going to pass this well before our deadline at the end of the show. So thank you to everyone, worldofsui.com.
Tim, always good seeing you. Thank you, sir. Sorry we kept you waiting. Sorry we didn't extort the audience fast enough charitably.
All right. Thanks, fellas, and thanks for doing what you're doing today for ALS. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Timmy.
Hey, it's Mike, and I know you were hoping for an update on those fishtail ponds in my backyard. Well, have I got news for you. I actually got lighting installed, and I can change it with an app. Beautiful fishtail ponds lit up red, depending on my mood. If my hockey team wins, we light those suckers red. Anyways, I like being outside. I like looking at those fishtail ponds. You love hearing about it. But what's in my hand other than my app changing the lighting? A Miller Lite is in my hand. That's right, because I know when a Miller Lite is in my hand, I make a good time, Miller time. I take that first sip, I know immediately I made the right call. Nothing goes with my fishtail palms quite like a Miller Lite. It makes everything so much better. And I'm going to have some people over. I'm going to toss them that beautiful white can. They're going to say, heck yeah. and they're going to have that first sip and know, just like me, that they made the right call. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.
Don Lebatard.
Who is the comedian? Is it James Mulvaney? How do you pronounce his...
John Mulaney?
There you go. Thank you. John Mulaney.
$2, yeah.
Yeah, that's a bad fine. Wow. Everybody started shaking their head.
I mean, he's arguably the most popular comedian right now. James Mulvaney.
Stugatz.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is John Mulvaney the most popular columnist at Lebatard?
Oh, my God.
Show?
Comedian, Dan. Jesus, get it together.
Excuse me. Comedian. My bad.
This is the Don Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Tom Haverstroh here. I am joined by Tommy Nance. He is the Marlins relief pitcher. I am so glad to talk to you right now. Unfortunate terms, because we both have a commonality, which is one of our parents has ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. And June 2nd, Thursday, is Lou Gehrig Day across baseball. And you and I both had a hand in making this happen. So let's talk about it, because we want to get more awareness out there. We need to get more awareness about this disease. So I hate that we have this bond together, you and me, Tommy, but thank you so much for joining me and talking about this horrible disease that has affected our families.
Happy to be on here. I'm glad you reached out to me. It's sad that this is how we got to meet and stuff, but you know, I'm always happy to, you know, talk about it and raise more awareness, because I think that's the big thing. There's still too many people out there that don't know that ALS is a disease that affects many, many people every year. So any and all capacity, like I just want to help. So
I did the Ice Bucket Challenge in 2014, didn't know what ALS was. And I kind of feel like, Tommy, you're in the same bucket, where we didn't really know about ALS until it hit one of our parents. And I'm just wondering, what was your knowledge of ALS before it entered your family there?
I mean, I really, like you said, I had like no knowledge. I mean, I knew that it was a thing. I knew Lou Gehrig had this disease and it was named after him. Like, really the minimal, you know, everyone's like, oh, like, it's not going to affect me, it's not going to affect my family, but I'm aware that it's like a real thing. And then we found out that my dad had it. So he was a firefighter for 19 years, retired from the fire station, then went and worked as he was like a fire investigator, worked at Universal Studios for a little while. And he was starting to have some like health problems there. And I remember coming home from college one year to surprise the family. I didn't even tell the family that I was coming home. I showed up. It was like late at night. Nobody was home though. I'm like standing outside.
Classic move. I love this move. Yeah.
Yeah. No one's home. I'm like, dang, I had this whole thing prepared. So I called him. I was like, hey, where are you guys at? You know, I'm standing outside. I came to surprise you. And the conversation just kind of turned to like, also I wanted to let you know that I found out that I've been diagnosed with ALS. So like, that's when I found out. So that hit me. I mean, I was in a bit of shock because I didn't know anything about it. So of course I'm like, okay, this is the worst case scenario ever. Had to do a bunch of research on my own. You know, he then later informed me, like, I just want you to know, like, this is like a non-genetic type of ALS. So he's like, I just don't want you to worry. Like, I'll be good. I'm going to stay strong. I'm going to stay positive. Like I've always been my whole life. It was tough for sure. And that was now like 8 years ago. So
he's telling you this and you're like, oh my God, I need to go Google this. I need to find out what this means. Because for me, for my family, my mother had what we thought was drop foot. Like she was tripping outside. She had weakness in her foot. And we were like, wow, this doesn't seem to be getting better. And all the doctors were like, we're not going to rule out ALS. We don't think it's ALS, but we need to check all these different things off before we get to that diagnosis. Because what people don't realize is ALS doesn't have a diagnostic test. It is a disease that is a game of elimination. And for your father, what were the symptoms that he was feeling where you realized this isn't those other things. This might be something.
So it was nothing that like we noticed. You know, it was all like, you know, like I was saying, he's one of the strongest men that I know. So, you know, he doesn't want people to know like when he's struggling or like having a hard time, you know, with something, you know. But like later on, it was, I believe, weakness in like one of his hands. So like even right now, like that's probably one of the worst areas for him is, I think it's his left hand. I could be wrong there. But, and then obviously his legs, I think he just felt off. Something wasn't right. Like he didn't feel as stable, like on his feet. And for him, I feel like it declined pretty quick at first, and then it just sort of stopped. And it's been, I mean, it's still been declining a little bit, but very, very slowly, slow progressing ALS. I mean, 8 years is pretty incredible. But yeah, he got to be a part of, you know, thanks to the Ice Bucket Challenge, actually, he got to be a part of ALS TDI. So because of the amount of money that they raised, they were able to add, I think, 6 to 8 more people to the
The trial.
So he wasn't among the original group.
Yeah.
And got added in that next group of people because of all the money that was raised. So he got to go to Boston. My mom and him went. They checked out Fenway. They, you know, they made it a trip. And he's been doing their whole study since, sends them readings of his speech, his hand strength, leg strength, all that stuff. And they just put it together in this kind of module online that he gets to look at. And yeah, it's pretty cool what they've been able to do.
So when you found out the diagnosis, where were you in your career at that point? So you were just coming out of college. You're still in college with dreams of being a major league pitcher.
Let's see. So 8 years ago, 2014. So I was, my senior year in college was 2013. I was at Santa Clara University. I had just had Tommy John surgery at the end of October 2013 or 2013 was when I had Tommy John surgery. So I decided I went back to school, rehabbed at school. I was finishing up my degree and it was, I think, summer break. And I decided to come home and visit. So I was not playing. I was rehabbing still. I was out of baseball for about 2 years after I had surgery. So yeah, I really was just focusing on school at that point and getting healthy.
So how cool was it for you that you not only made the majors last year, but you were able to do it with your father watching? He was alive to see you make the majors. How cool was that?
I mean, that means the most to me, honestly. I mean, he's been my biggest fan and supporter my entire life. He's been my coach. He's been, you know, a mentor. He's been a role model, all that stuff. And I always, even when I was little, I always wanted to be a Major League Baseball player. You know, I had these big dreams of wanting to do it. But I, unlike a lot of people, I believed it. And I put in the work and effort to make it happen. And a lot of that was due to him and his mindset that kind of bled into my life. So the fact that he got to see it all kind of come to fruition and then get to get flown out and watch me throw on Lou Gehrig Day, the first one that we've had, that was really special. And then we did an interview together. And I mean, it was, he might have been more excited than me. I don't know. Like, I mean, it was unreal to debut. He was the first person I called. As soon as I found out, he was the first phone call. And I think he was maybe half asleep when I called because it was kind of late. I was in, where was I? I was in Minnesota when that happened. But yeah, it's been really special. And I know he's super proud of me and texts me after, you know, all my outings, constantly telling me he's proud of me and to keep it up.
Did you, on Lou Gehrig Day last year, did you talk with your manager, Ross, where you were like, hey, can you make sure I pitch today? Can you just, it would be really cool.
No, but I don't know. Maybe he had plans that I didn't know about. But like right when I got up there with the Cubs, you know, he during batting practice, he likes to go around and talk to all the guys, especially the pitchers, just kind of check in, see where everyone's at and how everyone's doing, asking us how our families are doing, things like that. And one of our first meetings, he was asking about my family, and I had brought it up, and then that's when he brought up Boog. It's like, oh, I gotta get you hooked up with Boog. I'll get you his information. You guys can connect, and there's a lot more that like I want to do. And I talked about it a little bit on like the one Zoom call that I was on in the off season. So I have like ultimate goals that I would love MLB to kind of do. But
so you're going to be able to pitch on Lou Gehrig Day for the second straight year. Your parents are going to be watching. Your family is going to be watching. And hopefully you get to pitch, strike out the side, give a shout out to your dad. This would be an amazing thing. And I'm so excited that we're able to get this done and get Lou Gehrig Day in baseball, the second annual Lou Gehrig Day in baseball. And for those who are listening that want to help out, www.worldofsui.com/Lulapalooza in partnership with the Miami Marlins. We are raising money, donating to Permobile, who is going to outfit someone with a motorized power wheelchair. We're also benefiting the ALS Center in Miami, IMALS, and as well as Project Main Street with Boog Shambi and the Tim Sheehy Foundation. Anything else you want to say to the people who are listening who might want to get involved or want to know more about ALS and watch you as a fan of the Marlins and want to know more about ALS?
I think just start by, you know, doing your own research a little bit. Just look up what ALS is and read stories and testimonials of people who've gone through it and try to find a way to help if that's what, you know, people are compelled to do. And I hope a ton of people come out to support in Miami. I mean, we got a beautiful stadium there. Like, let's fill that thing up. Let's make it a party. Let's make it fun. Let's, you know, raise some money and help some people out.
Hey, it's Mike, and I know you were hoping for an update on those fishtail ponds in my backyard. Well, have I got news for you. I actually got lighting installed, and I can change it with an app. Beautiful fishtail ponds lit up red, depending on my mood. If my hockey team wins, we light those suckers red. Anyways, I like being outside. I like looking at those fishtail ponds. You love hearing about it. But what's in my hand other than my app changing the lighting? A Miller Lite is in my hand. That's right, because I know when a Miller Lite is in my hand, I make a good time, Miller time. I take that first sip, I know immediately I made the right call. Nothing goes with my fishtail ponds quite like a Miller Lite. It makes everything so much better. And I'm going to have some people over. I'm going to toss them that beautiful white can. They're going to say, heck yeah. And they're going to have that first sip and know, just like me, that they made the right call. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.